You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is a leading expert on the paranormal, with 50 books on a wide range of paranormal, spiritual, and mystical topics, including her most recent, Talking to the Dead, co-written with George Norrie. She has 30 years of full-time experience working with the paranormal, and her current work focuses on interdimensional entity contact of all kinds. Rosemary's radio report, Strange Dimensions, airs on the Para-X radio show. And she has been featured on Coast to Coast AM and other radio and television shows. She will be presenting the program Discarnate Entities, Spirit Attachment, and Influences from Between the Realms during the Haunting Experiences, Ghosts, Hauntings, Phantom Phenomena, and Their Relevance to Our Lives conference in Virginia Beach from May 4th to the 6th. ARE members can read her article, Angelophanies, How We Experience Angels, in the April-May-June issue of Venture Inward magazine at edgarcayce.org/members. Her website is visionaryliving.com.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you very much, Art. I'm just delighted to be with you.
Now, how did you become interested in ghosts and psychic phenomena?
Like a lot of people in this field, I had childhood experiences. I think most children are open to the unseen and have a few experiences that may fade into the backdrop of memory over time. But for some of us, they stay in the forefront, and they whet our appetite to know more about mysterious things. And I always loved the mysterious. I liked science fiction, the occult, horror stories, paranormal things. And so my own experiences were part of the fuel that inspired me to pursue my own study. And eventually, my personal study became my professional line of work.
Was there a point at which you realized that the other realm was actually real and that you could interact with it?
You know, when I was a kid, and children have, I think, a different viewpoint than adults, you assume that things are what they are and that other people have the same experiences. And when you get older, you find out that in terms of the paranormal, that's not always the case. So for me, my experiences were always real. And now, I was not the kind of sixth sense child like the movie. I didn't see a lot of dead people, but I had invisible playmates, and I saw mysterious lights, and I felt angels around me, and angels would even talk to me. Adults tend to pass this off as a child's imagination, and it's true that children do have very vivid imaginations. But it is our imagination that allows us to experience the unseen as well. Now, there were a lot of psychic experiences in my family, and that was another aspect, too. My mother, for example, had a lot of precognitive dreams. She also had experiences with entity visitations, you know, pillars of light and things like that. Sometimes she had some experiences with darker entities. And that also inspired me to do research, especially the dreaming, being able to dream the future accurately. And when I was a teenager then, I began experimenting with my own dreams to learn how to astral project and peek into the future, send messages to people, and things like that. So there was always a basis in reality for me. I was very puzzled why some people claim that it's quote-unquote all in your head, like it doesn't mean anything, or you're just making it up. I could never relate to that viewpoint. And I wanted to find out more why things are that way. Why don't we all have uniform experiences with the paranormal? And what is it about experiences that could perhaps entice science to take a closer look at them?
Interesting. So you're looking at the differences in the ways people experience the paranormal, if at all.
That's one of the avenues of my work. Now, over the course of time, since I started doing this full-time in 1983, I've written over 50 books on a wide range of subjects, and that's just because I'm curious Georgette, so to speak. I want to know everything I can about everything. I discovered along the way that things in the paranormal really are interrelated, and so it's helpful to have at least a working understanding of as many areas as possible. And because the paranormal, the unseen, the interdimensional, those things have always been real to me, I've never really been interested in trying to prove the paranormal to skeptics and disbelievers. I think it's very healthy to look for natural explanations first, and I always encourage people to do that. If you have an experience, try and explain it naturally first before you automatically jump to the anomalous. So what I'm really focusing on in my work is the how and why of experience. And in doing research into history, mythology, religion, even anthropology, the social sciences, psychology, the experiential literature, psychical research, all of these fields, they show pictures of our experiences with other dimensional realms. And human beings have had pretty consistent experiences over history. We've had different explanations for them and different labels for them, but it seems very clear from the anecdotal literature that we've had encounters with things that aren't entirely of our realm.
In your research, have you studied the work of Edgar Cayce much?
I have. The work of Edgar Cayce became very important to me. I really appreciated his viewpoint, and of course his life story just fascinated me about how he came into these understandings of things unseen. I read a lot of his readings, a lot of books written about his readings. I've even been to the ARE a good number of times to attend seminars there. And the readings really hold up over time, especially the health readings. So how do you explain that? How do you explain a man like Edgar Cayce, who could understand the things that he did, if he did not have some sort of spiritual assistance?
You've written many books, including the most recent Talking to the Dead, co-written with George Norrie. How did this book come about?
I've known George for a long time. In fact, I met George when he was still in St. Louis with a show called Night Talk with the Nighthawk. And after he took over Coast to Coast, I became one of his guests there, too. George and I have had many conversations about the paranormal, and we share many similar interests in terms of, you know, what's really going on here and what can people like us do to help others who are coming to terms with their experiences and wanting to understand more about these areas. So one of the topics that we've bounced around for quite some time was spirit communications. When I became more involved in paranormal investigation and experimenting with different techniques and devices for trying to have contact with the spirit world, George had me on his show quite a bit to discuss my results and play clips on the air. And that's how Talking to the Dead became a reality.
Now, when you say play clips on the air, were these EVPs?
Yes, I've collected a lot of electronic voice phenomena clips, and some of them are what I would call passive EVP. That's where you take a recording device, like a little digital recorder, and ask some questions. You leave a space for answers because you don't really hear anything, and then on playback, you might hear some what are called mystery voices talking or maybe even answering your questions. Well, there are other devices that have been designed for real-time communication, and those really intrigued me. About 7 or 8 years ago, I started experimenting with a technique called radio sweep, which is it's like a modified radio that scans like the AM band very, very fast. So it's like you're listening to a jumble of stations in a few seconds. And this creates a noise matrix that seems to facilitate the manifestation of unknown voices on top of that. The interesting thing about radio sweep is that you can sometimes hear the answers while they're coming, not later on playback, and you can engage in usually very short snippets of dialogue with some sort of mystery communicator. It's a very controversial field, and I'm the first person to admit it. The techniques are unpredictable at best, and I think this is one of the reasons why science has such a problem with the paranormal, because we can't replicate things on a consistent basis for controlled studies, except in the area of sight ability, like guessing games and psychokinetic experiments to see the influence of mind over matter. But when it comes to doing something like EVP, it's really, you never know what you're going to get. You might get a lot, you might not. The communications might be meaningful. Oftentimes, there's no way of knowing who you're communicating with or proving it. But it's all data, I think, that is very useful to collect to help us have a deeper understanding of the interdimensional realms, which are our neighbors.
We'll be right back with more with Rosemary Ellen Guiley on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
The interdimensional realms, which are our neighbors. The afterlife is one of our neighbors, and other dimensions that are populated by beings we encounter are really our neighbors in the cosmic field. So I think this research is very useful to do, and most of the people doing it are either lay people like myself or people who have come out of technical and scientific backgrounds. They bring an expertise into the field, and quite often it's after they retire that they're able to get into these areas on a deeper basis.
Well, now, speaking of the AM sweep device, is that Frank's box?
That's one of the terms for it, because it was brought back to popularity by a man in Colorado named Frank Sumption. These devices actually have been experimented with for decades, almost since, you know, the beginning of the invention of things like the phonograph, the radio, the telegraph, all of the magnetic recording devices that have come into being over the last century or so have produced anomalous voices and communications that people have not understood. And the researchers who were interested in trying to perfect the ability to tune into these things have started experimenting with radio sweep on a consistent basis, even back in the 70s. But it really fell by the wayside, never really got a lot of public attention. And it wasn't until the whole field of amateur ghost hunting really took off that more attention was turned back into this area. You know, all those shows on television, for better or for worse, whether you love them or hate them, they did inspire a lot of interest. And I shouldn't say did, because a lot of them are still on the air. They inspired a lot of interest in the paranormal and stimulated a lot of people to want to go out and do their own investigations. So a lot of these technical devices have really sprung into being just within the last decade or so.
I have a question about the AM sweep device, because I've seen it used on at least one ghost investigation show. They'll pick up voices that last for maybe 1 or 2 seconds, and I was wondering if the sweep, if it locks onto a station and will stay on that station while a voice is being broadcast, or is it pre-programmed to just do half a second per frequency and just keep going?
Many of these devices have variable rates of speed of scan that can be controlled. And you do want to set it fast enough so that it doesn't linger on a station. The irregularities are that you're dependent upon what broadcast you can pick up in any given location. And sometimes there is a very strong signal, dominant station, that overrides a lot of the weaker ones. And you do run the risk of staying too long on a particular station. There is a distinction in the EVP voices versus the broadcast voices, and researchers are kind of divided on the significance of responses. Some people feel that if you get a 1 or 2 word response that really comes from a radio station, but it's evidential in terms of the question you've asked, that that is some sort of spirit manipulation of a natural process. And other people say that we should look only at mystery voices that seem to speak on top of the scan. And it's much harder to capture those, but I think that's where the real intrigue is. The others, they can be interesting, but I don't think they're as significant as what seems to piggyback on top of the scan. And what happens there? Let's say that you ask a question, and you might get a 5 or 6 word response. Well, if you have your scan set very fast enough, it's impossible to get that many words off a single station. You won't even get it off two stations, and yet it's the same voice that carries over the popping in the background of the radio scan. The voices tend to have the same characteristics that we find in passive EVP. That is, there's something not quite three-dimensional about them, so to speak. They don't seem like they're coming from a larynx of a person. They're robotic or tinny or flat. The cadence is very unusual. They might be oddly compressed. And sometimes it's difficult to know a gender. But they can say very evidential things. And the process is something that I think we have the ability of improving and even perfecting to the point where it can be like communication on demand. And George and I speculate on that in the book, that at what point we have the capability, because our technology keeps improving all the time, and at what point might we have a device like a laptop with a webcam that dials up the afterlife, or the cell phone that talks to entities or the dead on a reliable basis. These things may sound really far out to a lot of people, but they're no more far out than inventions like the airplane and the telephone were, and the automobile would have been to people centuries ago.
Thomas Edison, he wanted to have the spirit phone.
There's been a lot of speculation about Thomas Edison, and there are a lot of what I would call myths and urban legends and things that we may never know the answer to. Thomas Edison was reputed to have been working on a device literally called the telephone to the dead, and that he never completed it. Unfortunately, for a meticulous man who kept copious notes and records, there's never been any documents to surface that indicate that he actually did so. He did talk about his ideas a lot in the media. In the 1920s, now Edison died around 32, 33, somewhere around there. And in the 1920s, he gave a lot of interviews in the media, the international media, where he talked about a lot of his concepts of communication, including interdimensional communication and his thoughts on the afterlife. He was more of an agnostic than someone who was driven by religious faith. He had a concept of the afterlife, but it was elements of it were really closer to Buddhist philosophy, that when we die, a personality may not remain intact. We may scatter into what he called life units. These would be like little packets of energy that would scatter into the cosmos and reform somewhere in the afterlife, perhaps even, in the Buddhist concept of reincarnation, that's what forms a new personality, is these skandhas or characteristics, these packets of a person in the afterlife. And he did say that there ought to be a device to communicate with the dead. He did raise a lot of curiosity. But whether or not he actually put a device together, well, we have speculations and, reports. You know how urban legends go. And even conspiracy theories that, yes, he did work on it, but, you know, the powers that be didn't want this to come into existence, and so the plans were stolen and destroyed, and so was the device. So there are a lot of unanswered questions.
What are some of the most interesting experiences you had while investigating hauntings?
I've had numerous communications with either individuals in the afterlife or just what I will call entities in other dimensions. And I'm very open-minded about what's out there. I do believe the model that we are in a cake layer of multidimensional realities, and that there are times and places in our reality where these portals or doorways swing open and we have experiences with other things that are not of this dimension. And the afterlife would be one of them. Now, some of the people that I have done research with very specifically work with trying to communicate with the dead, and especially for the purpose of helping people who are grieving. And so their attempt would be to contact an actual person, perhaps on the other side. Researchers have found that it's not always a human being who seems to answer. There seem to be other entities out there who are interested in having a two-way communication process with us. In haunting investigations, it's a bit more open-ended, because even if you have reports that the spirit or presence of a particular person is said to be in the property, something like a ghost box, which is the generic term for these, it really reaches far beyond the actual physical environment. You might be able to contact an entity just about anywhere. And there seem to be a lot of them that are intrigued by this process and either just want to drop in and observe and comment over the shoulder, so to speak, for a while, or actually become engaged in the process. So I have had communications that I cannot explain naturally. I've had whole sentences. There was one dramatic experience I had with another researcher, and I asked if the communicator had a message. We're always asking for messages. We think that everything out there has something important to say to us. Well, it could be a two-way street. There could be researchers out in these other dimensions who tap into us and think maybe we've got some answers. And so an entity came, or a communicator, I should say, a communicator came on and said that, no, he didn't have a message. And another communicator chimed right in and said, "Rosemary, do you have a message for me?" And I was so floored that I didn't know what to respond. These communication bridges are very tenuous, and they only seem to hold for a certain while, and we don't have like coordinates, like cosmic telephone numbers, so to speak, that can hone us back into a specific target. And so that was all the communication I had with that particular communicator. But I've often speculated that in the model of multidimensional realities and parallel universes, that there are probably versions of ourselves doing the same things that we're doing. There are versions of us that are living out lives that might be very similar to the ones we have now.
You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
There could be people in another dimension clustered around their devices trying to probe the unknown cosmos, and they connect with us.
What can individuals do to deal with unwanted paranormal phenomena?
It does seem to be on the rise, and part of it is, I think, that just an interest in the paranormal kind of stirs up activity. It's around us all the time, and a lot of it lies dormant, but it can be activated through interest or, you know, people poking around. And also, I think another factor is that the population of humans, being ever expansive, we keep pushing into more and more remote areas where things might have been undisturbed for quite some time, and then people come in and plunk down houses and developments, and whatever it was that was residing there in peace and quiet gets stirred up. Sometimes there's a lot you can do. Sometimes there's not much you can do. It depends on the situation. There are places that seem to be energized by the land, and if you come along and build a house on an active piece of land, that land is active no matter what structure is on it, no matter who's in it, and it's not going to go away. So you might be able to dampen down the activity, but you'll never make it go completely away. And sometimes negative hauntings have to do with little wisps and remnants of the dead who remain behind, and those are fairly easy to clear away. They can be cleared away through house blessings and what would be called a house exorcism, cleansing of the environment. But some of the more persistent problems require long-term investigation and solution. I've always advocated to people that when it comes to the unseen, we have a responsibility for ourselves too, that we don't always have eminent domain. We're sharing space in a variety of ways. Some people seem to be very active triggers. That is, wherever they go, something seems to react to them. People who have that natural innate ability are advised to do some sort of training to help manage that, to strengthen up their barriers so they don't become triggers to everything all the time. And that can be done through studying things like energy healing, like Reiki, or other forms of laying on of hands or therapeutic touch. Any system that teaches a person how to perceive the unseen and shut down their boundaries so that they're not impinged by it is very useful for dealing with negative hauntings. The problem is that the media portrays a different scenario. And, of course, we've had religious authorities arguing that for centuries, too. You know, don't worry, call us, we'll take care of it. This is not like calling Terminix to get rid of some pests. We have very complex relationships with interdimensional space, and I think people need to understand that sometimes they have to be part of the solution.
You'll be speaking at the conference Understanding Haunting Experiences at the ARE in Virginia Beach from May 4th to the 6th. What will your topic be about?
My topic will focus on some of the more problematic sides of hauntings, and I'm going to cover like the negative remnants of ghosts, and if there seem to be more active and interactive entities, what are the likelihood circumstances that people would encounter those, and what are some of the measures that they can take. I attempt to educate people on what's happening around them, what the explanation is, and what some of the responsible and reasonable things are that they can do to improve their environment. There are a lot of things that people can do to clean the psychic space, so to speak. But I do deal in a lot of very persistent and intense hauntings, and those are much harder to resolve. So I'll be talking about some of my case experiences. I always want to leave people with something positive. I'm very against the Hollywood, you know, scare you, you know, these are all demons, you know, that sort of thing. That's great for entertainment, but for real life, it's a much different scenario. And it's not something that people need to be frightened of. It's just another part of reality. I do think that we are entering a stage in our evolution of consciousness and spirituality where there will be more openings to these other realms. And I think we're going to have to learn how to move into an expanded reality where these things aren't the exceptions. They're part of the backdrop of everyday living.
Besides the AM sweep device, what are some of the other tools you use when working with the paranormal?
I have experimented with a lot of things, and I have wound up keeping things very simple. I don't employ things like electromagnetic field meters. I think they have a limited usefulness. If you're in a house or a building, it's difficult to determine whether you're picking up natural sources or not. Thermal cameras are very expensive and also, I think, of limited use. In my current newsletter, and which is available on my website, visionaryliving.com, I have an article that says the best tool for paranormal investigation is you. Your own body, your own senses will tell you a lot. So my tools are cameras. I have an infrared camera. Video, I have high-definition video. I use a variety of recording devices. It's always good to have more than one. And I have an assortment of ghost boxes. I will usually use one at least once during an investigation. And beyond that, there are a lot of things that I've experimented with that were kind of interesting, but I didn't think they added a whole lot of value to the investigation. So too much gear, I think, is unnecessary, and at some point actually hinders the process of perceiving the unseen. We've got to face it. The paranormal is still a personal subjective experience. And if you're going to rely solely on equipment, you're going to miss about 90% of the action. So I've never really appreciated the viewpoint of some groups who say, oh, we're just scientific. There is no such thing as scientific ghost hunting, really. We can use scientific principles and approaches and technology, but you're dealing with something uncontrollable and erratic and unpredictable and intensely subjective. So what we have to rely on a lot is what we experience ourselves through our senses and through our extra senses. Hopefully technology will keep improving so that we can capture more and more hard data. Believe me, I want to see the hard data. I think that's important to keep striving for it. But it has to be a balance. It's having one or the other is only going to give us a very small part of the picture.
What do you think of EM pumps or electromagnetic pumps that are supposed to fuel paranormal activity?
I've experimented with them, and I have not noticed any significant results myself. I have talked to other researchers who have and who believe that they are quite helpful. There does seem to be a certain amount of electromagnetic properties about a lot of manifestations. For example, if you generate a lot of EMF through leaving the lights on, the computer on, the TV on, and things like that, that seems to dampen down the ability of some entities to manifest in an environment. It may not keep them completely away, but it seems to inhibit their ability to be present in our space. So these are things that I think are worth exploring to find out just what might be effective. Perhaps a device could be developed that would put out the right energy that would keep the space clear of interdimensional bleed through. But to date, my own experience with the pumps has not proved fruitful.
Is it better to investigate hauntings or the paranormal during the day or at night?
Everybody thinks it has to be done at night, and actually you can have very effective results during the day. There's some thought that actually phenomena might even be more active during the day because the Earth's magnetosphere is more highly charged by the energy of the sun. And since we have noticed magnetic components to a lot of these hauntings, for example, some intensely haunted areas are in what we would call negative magnetic anomaly sites. That is, the natural magnetic field of the area is significantly lower than surrounding areas. So does the presence of that anomaly make it easier for things to come through? Researchers have experimented with times of day and night. The one thing about night is that it becomes easier for the human organism to sense some of these things. They're really around us all the time. But at night, when things are quieter and we are more tuned in to that, whether by cultural conditioning or by the nature of our own physical organism, we perceive things more often.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
Incredible results during the day, especially with the EVP. I've seen photographs taken during the day that were more astounding than ones taken at night. So we don't need to limit ourselves. It just looks scarier on TV. Now, there is one effect that I have noticed over years, and I've asked other researchers about this, too, and have found correlation, and that's lunar phase. Everybody thinks the night of the full moon, things ought to be popping and hopping. In terms of paranormal, they're not. The night of the full moon tends to be very flat. The day or two before the full moon and the day or two after the full moon, very active. Same with the new moon, to a lesser extent than the full moon. But does this have to do with something with the electromagnetic effect of the moon on the Earth? Nobody really knows, but that is a phenomenon that I have observed for years in the paranormal. So would I want to investigate on the night of a full moon? No, I think that would be one of the poorest nights of the month to conduct an investigation. Better to do it the day or two before.
You have an article in the April, May, June issue of Venture Inward magazine, the magazine for members of the ARE, called Angelophanies, How We Experience Angels. What is an angelophany, and am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, you are, Art, and that's literally the perception of an angel. And that's another area of entity, what I would call entity contact experiences that I've been quite interested in, especially since I had some in my childhood. And so I've looked at the literature of people having angelic visions and visitations, the purposes of the visitations, the timing, are there certain circumstances where angels seem to manifest for people? Where do they come from? Are they directed by God? Do people summon them subconsciously or consciously? And the literature is quite full of fascinating experiences. I've had a number of angel encounters throughout life, and I do believe in angels, and their readiness to be called upon for spiritual help. We do have the phenomenon of the mysterious stranger who shows up at the right time and solves or prevents a crisis. But by and large, I think that our spiritual helpers do not have a mission to pull our chestnuts out of the fire, but they are available to help us stay on top of our obstacles and difficulties.
We've spoken about using technology to investigate the paranormal. What about things like pendulums with crystals on the end? What do you think of that?
I'm very much a fan of dowsing. And in fact, this year in June, I'm one of the featured speakers at the American Society of Dowsers Convention up in Vermont. And my topic will be the application of dowsing in paranormal investigation. I do use a pendulum. I've tried the rods as well. For me personally, the pendulum, a crystal pendulum, works better than the rods. Everybody has their own affinity with different kinds of tools. But the thing about dowsing is that it's a very simple, you would even call primitive, form of tool. And a lot of times our high tech will fail. If you're dependent on batteries and things running and whatnot, there seems to be something about paranormal phenomena that can interfere with our high tech equipment. A dowsing pendulum will always work.
We're about out of time, actually. Could you tell us your website again?
It's visionaryliving.com, and I have a library of articles based on a lot of my work, a complimentary monthly e-newsletter. You can sign up for it on the home page, and, of course, my calendar is there as well, detailing all of my various activities. I always also try to put an inspirational message on the home page, and I believe in blending things. I've had involvement in the metaphysical for most of my life, and so I bring that aspect into my paranormal work as well. It's very difficult to separate the two if you're going to be effective in investigating the paranormal. Sooner or later, you have to get into the metaphysical and the mystical.
Oh, yes. And that's visionaryliving.com. Well, thank you for coming on the show today.
It's been a pleasure, Art, and I look forward to the conference at the ARE.
Well, it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Allison Ray, my wife. Well, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good. And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's Thought for the Day is 3581-1. There is today, every day, set before thee, good and evil, life and death. Choose thou, for only self can separate you from the love of the Father. For it should be made manifest to thee that thou art conscious, in a living world, aware of suffering, of sorrow, of joy, of pleasure. These, to be sure, are the price one pays for having will, knowledge. But let that knowledge be spent in a way and manner to help others, for as ye do to thy fellow man, ye do to thy maker.
Hmm. And what does that mean to you?
Well, you know, this comes down to God giving us free will, and that it's up to us each and every day, kind of even sometimes I think each and every minute, to make a decision about what we're going to do, how we're going to use our will, and not to ignore suffering, not to ignore the discomforts of the world, not to ignore the joys either, but to be part of it and flex our will to make things happen in the world that we believe are for the good of all.
Wow. And it talks about, for as ye do to thy fellow man, ye do to thy maker. We have to remember that for those who are in need, Jesus said that as we treat them, we are treating God. So don't just ignore the homeless person asking for help.
It's so true.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Rosemary Ellen Guiley for talking to us about the paranormal. To find out more, visit her website, visionaryliving.com. Also, she'll be speaking at the conference, Haunting Experiences, Ghosts, Hauntings, Phantom Phenomena, and Their Relevance to Our Lives, in Virginia Beach, at the ARE, from May 4th to the 6th. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Thanks also to Allison Ray for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.